It's the morning show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The owners of Green Bay Packaging are pretty happy. They just got a large sum of money from the state to invest in upgrading their business just in time to take advantage of growth of worldwide packaging markets. For the city of Green Bay, this represents just some of the investment that their community is making. Jeff Bollier is a business reporter for the Green Bay Press Gazette. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, callers, do you live in Green Bay? What are your thoughts about the new paper mill? Do you think it'll be good for the local economy? What impact do you think it will have on the whole state's economy? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Jeff, this is a new paper mill. It'll be replacing an existing paper mill. Is that how it works?
That is correct. This will be a brand new paper mill that would replace a 71-year-old mill that has been operating on the same site on Green Bay's northeast side that whole time.
And will it be making different product than the old paper mill?
As I understand it, they will be making very similar product, sort of the raw paper material for making paperboard, and it would be materially the same, but they would be able to increase production by 50% at least. That is sort of out what is being put out of the new facility alone. So if they expand the size of the paperboard that they are able to produce also, I would imagine that would also increase production and volume-wise as well.
So we're talking paperboard, but this is packaging. This is the stuff that we get on our doorstep from Amazon and all over the country.
Correct.
Go ahead.
I'm not exactly sure who Green Bay Packaging supplies it to, but yeah, it is the sort of corrugated cardboard that packaging that so many of our Amazon and Walmart packages arrive in these days.
So has Green Bay Packaging been considering this for years? How did this all come about?
They've been apparently considering this for some time now. It's good to know that they don't just jump into a $500 million project, kind of on a whim. But they've been looking at this for a while, and they had several options that they considered as they made this choice. One of them would have been to stop producing paper themselves entirely and just buy the material that they needed to make the packaging that they produce for customers. Or another option that they looked at was building in a different state, somewhere in the lower Midwest. A few examples that they had mentioned were Iowa, Indiana, or Missouri as ones that would put them much more in connection or connected to some supply chain and logistics partners that, so they said that building in one of those states would have made it much easier or convenient for shipping and delivery across the country.
Do you believe that?
There are certainly a lot more sort of interconnected network of interstates and airports, rail systems to be seen in southern or central Midwest states. But it's hard to tell without looking at the sort of calculus that they did on this and calculations that they made on this, whether or not, how good of a deal it would have been or how much more it would have saved them.
So you mentioned a $500 million investment. We know that the state is kicking in some. Are they kicking in all of that or just some of that?
They are kicking in. The state is kicking in about $60 million. That is not a guarantee yet. The Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation board meets on June 29th, and I believe that is when they will be considering $60 million in tax incentives, I believe tied to job creation, although we haven't exactly gotten the breakdown on how many jobs will have to be created, how many retained, everything in order to capture the entire $60 million in credits.
So how many jobs is Green Bay Packaging saying that they're going to create? How many people work there now, and are they going to create extra jobs is my question.
So right now in Brown County, Green Bay Packaging has at least, I want to say, six sites in Green Bay, De Pere, and Ashwaubenon. They employ more than 1,500 people in Wisconsin and about 1,100 people here in Brown County alone. This mill employs about 600 people right now that they say will have their jobs retained. CEO Will Kress, was like, everybody, when we shut down this mill and start up the new one, everybody working on this old one will be working on the new one. So kind of one of those bold pledges that, people definitely like to hear around here. But the project could also create up to 200 more new jobs on top of that. So it would up their local employment to about 1,350 and almost 1,700 in Wisconsin alone.
So you said the state is looking in terms of whether they will give $60 million or how much they will give to this project by a jobs calculation. Is 200 more jobs enough? That's like $300,000 per job.
Well, I haven't done the math on it yet, but the calculations on that would seem to be about right. And it depends on whether or not they also will receive credit for retaining jobs. A lot of these tax credit incentives also will help. Can help with job retention as well as job creation too. And so the executive team from Green Bay Packaging kind of seems to have made their case to state and local officials that they would really like to do this here, but that they need some help to make it work as compared to their other options that they were considering.
We are talking about a big investment that Green Bay Packaging is making in a new plant. Jeff Bollier of the Green Bay Press Gazette is giving us the skinny on this. The Green Bay Packaging will be asking about $60 million from the state of Wisconsin. That is yet to be decided for certain. Jeff, talk to me about the environmental impact of this new plant.
Well, that is something that Green Bay Packaging and a lot of environmentalists in the area are very excited about, because one or two of the details that they did relate to this is that Green Bay Packaging will be shifting the new mill to natural gas-fired power as opposed to coal-fired power. Mm. So they announced during last week when they made this announcement of this investment, they said that that shift from coal to modern gas boilers will reduce sulfur dioxide and particulate matter by more than 90%, as well as they will not be drawing water from or discharging water into the Fox River ever again. And they are able to do that because just to the north of them, partly, is the NEW water. It's the Green Bay region's water and water treatment facility.
So they're going to just discharge their wastewater into the water treatment facility?
Yes. So there are still some cleanups from older paper mills. Mm-hmm. Going on throughout the northeastern Wisconsin and the Fox River. So the ability to not discharge wastewater into the Fox River is something that the company is very proud of. And I think people around here are very excited to see that they're thinking about that.
Do we know when construction is going to be completed?
This is going to take quite a while. It's going to take, they estimate, until sometime in 2021 before this project goes online. And that is, the mill goes online, and that is assuming that they can meet their sort of fast-track start for the project, which is they are hoping to get started in September. And even more than that, when I was on the site for their announcement last week on Tuesday, we had already noticed that there were some Myron construction trailers on site. So it looks like they're probably already preparing and hope to hit the ground running.
They're jumping into this. What happens to people's jobs while they're building the new plant?
So the existing mill will continue to operate for the period when they are building the new mill. They're going to kind of build it sort of right out in front. And then once the new mill is ready to come online, I think they said that within a couple of weeks to a month, the old mill will shut down and the new mill will kick in, and everybody will kind of move over to that new to the new production facility.
Jeff Bollier of the Green Bay Press Gazette is giving us the skinny on Green Bay Packaging, which just announced that it was investing $500 million into a new plant. About 60 of that, $60 million, is going to be coming from the state. We'll look at where state investment is coming from exactly in a moment. It's the morning show. It's the morning show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. On the State Capitol Report this morning, Green Bay Packaging just received a $500 million investment. $60 million of that may be coming from the state. The new plant will open in 2021 and is scheduled to add 200 jobs. Do you live in Green Bay? What are your thoughts about this paper mill? Do you think it's good for the local economies? Do you think it's fine for the state to invest almost $60 million in incentives for the new paper mill? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. The Green Bay Packaging, has this been struggling, Jeff Bollier?
I don't get the impression that they have been struggling. I think they are looking to try and keep up with the pace of business. Paper prices have been rising over the last couple of years, although a couple of company officials did tell me also that as prices are rising, so are costs to produce. I think that they're just looking at an outdated mill that has been updated as much as they can, or sort of had technological upgrades where possible, but that it was time to go to a larger size product that they could produce. This one is going to be, I believe, capable of up to 300 inches wide, as opposed to the current one is just over 160 inches. So they will be able to expand that way also, and I think that is part of what is also driving this.
You talked about they have thought about going south where supply lines are closer. They been making a profit? $60 million is coming from the state. Where's the rest of this money coming from?
Well, $60 million will come from the state. Brown County has agreed to contribute $5 million in site preparation, and then the city of Green Bay is evaluating tax incremental financing or TIF support package for them, also that would reimburse them about $23 million in property taxes once the mill is up and operational. So they have to make the investment before the city's incentives would be there. So that's about $88 million, or by my rough math, just over 15% of the total project cost of about $580 million. So about 15% will come from local and state government. The rest of it, as we understand it, is they will be either taking on debt or making the investment themselves.
We are talking to Jeff Bollier of the Green Bay Press Gazette about Green Bay Packaging's new plant, which they just announced this week. Jeff, this is not the only investment that the city of Green Bay is making in redevelopment. There's kind of a renaissance of redevelopment there right now, isn't there?
Very much so. I mean, downtown Green Bay has, I've been here for a little more than 3 years now covering business, and in that time there's been quite a bit of investment in redevelopment and sort of growth in downtown. There have been companies like Associated Bank and Schreiber Foods that have either invested in building new headquarters buildings or moving employees down here, but then also a lot of old space that sort of from Green Bay's older industries has been or is in the process of being repurposed and sort of redeveloped into office space, startup areas for sort of technology and innovation firms, and for other companies to kind of move into the downtown or central city area. So, yeah, very much so. Redevelopment and reinvestment has been high on the city and the region's priorities recently.
Jeff Bollier is a business reporter for the Green Bay Press-Gazette. He joined us to talk about Green Bay Packaging's new multi-million-dollar paper mill, which is slated to be completed in 2021. Jeff, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now we're going to turn to transportation funding in today's State Capitol Report. Wisconsin just got a lot of money from the federal government to improve I-94 in the southeast corner of the state, but it got less money than expected. Is that a problem? Craig Thompson helps us answer that question today. He is the executive director of the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Craig, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We want people to call in and weigh in about I-94. Are you in favor of this I-94 spending project? Do you drive it all the time? What do you think of I-94, especially when you come in from Illinois and cross over the border? Do you think Foxconn is the main reason the state is prioritizing this project, or do you think it's more than that? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Craig Thompson, first of all, before we start talking about I-94, we just heard about washed out roads in northern Wisconsin because of this flooding. I asked our reporter, Danielle Kading, if the state can't even get money to stop flooding from happening, how are they going to get money to fix the roads now that flooding has happened? She didn't know. Do you?
I don't either, to be honest with you. I think it's a great question. And I was listening this morning on your program to, Jason Jackman, the commissioner up in Douglas, and I know Emmer Shields, the county highway commissioner up in Ashland. I just, I feel for them what they must be going through trying to keep up with this right now. These acts of nature, you can't help. But when they come in amidst a funding system that we're this far already underwater, so to speak, it's gonna make things tough.
Good pun. That was a really nice pun. Let's turn to I-94. The Federal Department of Transportation gave Wisconsin $160 million in grant money to help with the construction of Interstate 94, which is the north-south freeway project in Kenosha, Racine, and Milwaukee counties. That's a lot of money, but it is $86 million less than Wisconsin had requested. What is your reaction to that?
Well, I agree with both of those points. It is a lot of money. It's one of the larger grants given out with this infra grant nationally. But it is $86 million short of what we had requested. We as an organization had wrote a letter in support to the federal government of this infra grant. But I think the problem is when you start so far behind the eight ball, the I-94 north-south is really between basically Kenosha and the Mitchell Interchange. And this project was started back in 2009. And it was supposed to be take about 7 years, so
wow.
It was supposed to be done in 2016. It's been delayed numerous times. Heading into this last budget, the governor had said not another penny for southeast Wisconsin, and there was no funding included for it. It wasn't until the Foxconn separate legislation package came up that there was money included to get this moving again. I think it's a very important corridor with other segments of the interstate down in southeast that really need to get done. So that's a good thing. It's just the piecemeal way that we're going about it.
So why was it delayed for so long?
Well, in 2011, the governor said that we were going to switch and emphasize getting the zoo done, the zoo interchange in Milwaukee, which, by the way, when that project started, it was all one, and now we've broken that up into two things. The core of the zoo will be completed, my understanding is, by Labor Day. But we broke that up into two separate things. Now there's the north leg of the zoo, which is Highway 41, 45 near Mayfair Mall, for people that are familiar with that, that comes off. That is on no schedule at all whatsoever. We just keep sort of trying to take money and move it around to the most, you know, whatever emergency is going on at the moment. But we don't seem to have a coherent plan.
For those of us not in southeast Wisconsin, what is the zoo? What does it stand for?
Well, they call it the Zoo Interchange because it's near the Milwaukee County Zoo there. But it is the area that sort of breaks off where you can go to 894 towards, you know, Racine in Chicago. You can go north to Fond du Lac, or you can keep going 94 into Milwaukee. It's that big interchange there. It's west of Miller Park, and so there's about a 3.5 mile stretch between that zoo interchange and the Marquette interchange, which I think a lot of people are familiar with, which lies right in front of Miller Park, and that stretch has not been done. So we've spent over $1 billion on the Marquette interchange and over $1 billion that's going to be on the zoo when it's done. And we're going to have not done the part in the middle, which really doesn't improve traffic flow much at all. And in this last budget, we actually walked away from the federal. We had to hit federal approval to get that project done, but due to lack of funds, we asked them to withdraw their approval, and it's nowhere right now.
Interesting. So this $86 million shortfall in terms of the request from the federal government and what we actually got from the federal government, was that money that the government was actually counting on, or was there some padding done and we got exactly what we expected to get?
Well, I don't know that they, in fairness to the state, I don't know if they could have any idea what we would truly get. These infra grants are fairly new, and they're for large projects like this. In the legislation for Foxconn, it called for 94 North South to get done. And what we did was, since there was not enough money in the transportation fund, we issued bonds about 240-some million out of the debt service will be paid for out of the state's general fund. So that's the fund that, you know, that we generally use for all other government services, schools and universities and healthcare and the like. The debt service will be paid out of that for that half. And then the other half, the roughly $250 million we were hoping to get from the federal government, the infra grant. And as you said, we got, you know, $86 million short of that. So now we're using there was some additional federal funding for states for transportation that all the states are getting, and now we're going to take a great share of that and try to put it towards I-94 North South as well, and that still doesn't get us there. Then there's some unused bond revenue that they're going to direct towards that as well. And that's what they're hoping is going to sort of get them over the line to get that project done.
We are talking about road infrastructure here in Wisconsin. We've been talking a little bit about road infrastructure in northern Wisconsin where there has been flooding. We're focusing this hour on the I-94 project and how the state will pay for it. We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings and ask Craig Thompson your questions. Janice from La Crosse has something to say. Janice, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call. Thank you, Craig. Just to put my little 2 cents worth in for La Crosse over on this western side, that sometimes we feel like, you know, we're being, denied, but anyway, we're over here on the western side, not on the eastern side. But we have such problems because we're between the bluff and the river, so we're limited. But anyway, finally, La Crosse Street, which is a state road that goes down into 3rd Street, that's just a state highway, it's so bad they can't even drive on it now. And it goes right past the University of Wisconsin La Crosse. And down through the little city and out, and it's like, oh, my goodness. It's been 25 years since they've touched it. And now they say, oh, well, they're going to, I guess, push it out again. And in the meantime, the city, you can't drive on it. So now the city's trying to, fund this thing. And, of course, that's difficult. And so, we're really, it's just a horrible situation. I don't see why they can't keep these roads up and so we don't get to the point where, oh, we haven't touched it for 25 years. Of course it's shot. You know, come on.
Right.
To keep these roads up, these highways, these streets, the roads, everything, it's unconscionable.
Janice, thank you for that. Craig, people in La Crosse and in other parts of the state are sort of feeling like the unfavored child sometimes with road construction. But her point is a really good one. Wouldn't it cost less just to keep the roads up than to repair them?
Well, Janice makes very good points. And as a matter of fact, we were just in La Crosse, I think about 2 weeks ago, with the La Crosse County Highway Commissioner, Ron Chamberlain, taking a tour through that area. He got us on a school bus, and we're doing this in several areas of the state, our rough road tour. And we had looked at La Crosse Street, which Janice is right, it's a state highway, but it's the main drive coming into beautiful La Crosse, and that road is not beautiful. It's in terrible condition. And Mr. Chamberlain took us around and showed us just all the needs that they do have that they're not able to get to in that area. To your point, it is more cost-effective to do the maintenance at the right time rather than let roads fall too far into disrepair. Now, with that being said, depending on the type of road, like the interstates we were talking about, they were built with the proper maintenance at the proper times to last about 50 years. So at that point in time, they just are at the end of their life and they need to be rebuilt.
Hmm.
But if you do the proper maintenance at the proper times, you can get the maximum life out of the roads, which for county and city roads is generally maybe 30 to maybe 40 years.
And is the state perhaps considering a tax to help build these roads, to help get money to build these roads? I mean, I know if I'm driving my car on a road that is hardly drivable, my car is going to have wear and tear. So are they considering perhaps tax on some sort of vehicle issues that will pay for this?
Well, you know, that was really the issue. Just so you know, our group, we believe we absolutely need to, and most of our neighbors have passed transportation packages in quite a few states across the country, because all the states are dealing with the interstate system that's turning 50, and rebuilding that's really expensive on top of trying to keep up with these local roads. And that's been a debate at the state level, I'd say, for at least the last four budgets. There was a commission that was created several budgets ago. I actually sat on that 10-member commission. You know, we recommended that we raise revenue. This last budget was that very issue is the one that held up the state budget for over 2 months. Republicans in the assembly argued strongly that, you know, we do need to raise revenue for that. The governor disagreed. And there was a stalemate over that. And in the end, we didn't really raise what we did. We did pass one revenue. It was a fee on electric cars and hybrids, $75. But that doesn't really raise any in the grand scheme of things, any substantial amount of money.
Right. So the governor was arguing with people from his own party who wanted to raise revenue to help repair and build roads.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting for the same party, you know, is in control of all three chambers, and it was a pretty heated difference of opinion on that topic, and we didn't come to resolution. I know the Speaker of the Assembly, Robin Gross, said it was his one disappointment. I think he was pretty proud of the rest of the budget, but said that was the one great disappointment of the budget, and said that, you know, next time around, we better get serious about this.
We are talking about road construction and maintenance in Wisconsin. Some northern Wisconsin roads have been washed out because of flooding, and they weren't in great condition to begin with. And I-94 project has turned 50. The federal highways have turned 50. There's a lot of work that needs to be done to upgrade these federal highways. We're going to talk more about the I-94 project, how the state is going to pay for it, with Craig Thompson in a moment. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking about improvements in I-94 with Craig Thompson of the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. What do you think about the I-94 project that has been going on, as Craig Thompson said, since 2009? Do you think Foxconn is the main reason the state is prioritizing this project? Are there any transportation or infrastructure needs that you think aren't being addressed from in the state? Where should Wisconsin be using its money? Call us, 800-642-1234. You can reach us at ideas@WPR.org via email, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Craig Thompson, do you worry that state money that's now going to I-94 could be used for something else? I mean, there's a scarcity here. What is our most important project in the state?
Well, I think, you know, the word you just used is accurate, is scarcity. Again, I do believe we've got to finish rebuilding the interstates. A lot of them are in southeast Wisconsin. If we're going to, first of all, we just have to because it's the end of their life. And if we're going to get the maximum dollars out of what we've already spent, we have to not just do parts, but we've got to finish it. But at the same time, the needs in the rest of the state are really great. There was an audit done by the Legislative Audit Bureau the year before last, and they found that the condition of our state highways was not only the worst in the Midwest, but really by a pretty gaping margin. We had 32% of our state highways in good condition, compared with 75% in Michigan and Ohio and Indiana,
wow,
some of these areas. So the closest one to us was, in terms of poor, was Iowa. About 52% of their state highways were in good condition, as opposed to 32 of ours. But the difference being, since that time, Iowa passed a 10-cent gas tax increase and has been, working on resolving that. And we've actually reduced funding for our state highway rehabilitation program and our state highway program overall. So it really is concerning what's going to happen with our roads that are already in very poor condition across the state.
So these highways that were built 50 years ago that are now old and need to be rebuilt. When they were built 50 years ago, the federal government put a whole lot of money into that. They pretty much built them. Is that expectation not realistic now?
That's a really great question, because, as you said, this was a huge, massive undertaking by the federal government. Dwight Eisenhower, it was a matter of national security, national defense, as well as trying to connect the country economically. And that's why it was called a freeway system, was that when the states got all that money from the federal government, we agreed that we would not put tolls up on their tax people again, because the federal government had given us the money for that.
Mm.
So there is a federal prohibition, other than, obviously, we know there's areas and there's all kinds of different reasons, grandfathering and different things, of some areas that are tolled. But so there's been a prohibition against tolling the interstates for that very reason that you mentioned. But now we're at that 50-plus year mark, and they need to be rebuilt, and the federal government isn't in a position to really come up with that much more money. So that has reignited the debate at the federal level whether they should lift the ban on tolling. But to date, they have not. But either way, I don't think we're going to see the federal government take the same type of role that they did back in the 50s and 60s of paying for these interstates.
We are talking about mostly the I-94 corridor and roads in Wisconsin on today's State Capitol Report with Craig Thompson. We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. George from Verona, welcome to the program, George.
Well, thank you very much. This is a terrific topic to discuss here. And my concern is that we have to have a change in mindset. The legislature, the governor, has to agree that we're not going to be able to fix the roads without sustainable funding. And that means increase the vehicle registration, the gas tax, a liquor tax. These are things that have been kicked around so long. But people hate the word increased taxes, but we've got to pay for roads. And this is just, it's silly. It's really silly. This should have been addressed the last session. It's been addressed for many years. But anyway, that's my 2 cents worth. The roads need work. It's not going to happen unless we really address funding, period.
Thank you very much, George. As a former Supreme Court justice said, I like to pay taxes. It buys me civilization. Do you agree with that, Craig?
Well, I certainly agree with George. I think the matter's pretty well understood, and I think the vast majority of our lawmakers understand it. We don't have enough revenue. It's really not close. And as he said, whether it's gas tax or registration fees, one of the efforts we did engage in several years back was there was concerns over a decade ago. There was some money that was taken out of the transportation fund to help shore up the state's general fund during hard economic times, and that really did erode people's trust in the fact that gas taxes and registration fees were supposed to be, you know, user fees for transportation. And so we did work with the legislature to get a question on the ballot. It was actually in the last gubernatorial election to amend the state's constitution. We asked the voters whether they would want to amend the state constitution to require that those gas tax proceeds and the proceeds from when we pay the $75 to put the sticker on our car to register it, that those go into a constitutionally segregated fund and have to be used on transportation. That passed in that last gubernatorial election with an 80% yes vote, over a million voters. So I think it was pretty clear people viewed this as a high priority.
But was it binding? Was anything done about that?
So the Constitution was amended, and those revenues do stay in that fund. But you still have to adjust the revenues and increase them, and that part we have not done since then. In 2006, we got rid of indexing our gas tax. We had done that for 20 years as a way to sort of have at least the revenues keep up with inflation a little bit the way sales tax and income tax do, because those are percentage-based taxes, and the gas tax is a flat amount. But in 2006, we repealed that, and the argument was that we would go back in and vote to adjust it, but we've just never done that. So our registration fee has remained flat since then. Our gas taxes have remained flat since then, and we have these, you know, once-in-a-generation costs, and we're driving more fuel-efficient cars. It all comes together to really end up where we're at right now, which is some of the worst roads in the country and really no plan yet to fix it.
Dennis from Madison. Dennis, welcome to the program.
You're talking to me? Okay.
Yes, yeah, I am.
What about the 18-wheelers that purportedly cause most of the damage to the interstate system? Why can't we tax those guys and so they can pay for the damage that they bring to everybody else on those roads?
Dennis has a good question, Craig. First of all, do 18-wheelers cause most of the damage? And to tax them, you would be throwing another tax on business, not just on the drivers.
That's true. So the heavier vehicles, whether it's 18-wheelers or it's some of the heavy farm equipment in that, do cause a disproportionate amount of the damage on the road. There's the engineering on that, I think, is clear. But if you look at they do pay both gas tax and other fees in Wisconsin. And actually, the motor carriers, the group that represents, you know, the big trucking companies like Schneider National and the others, have said that they would be okay with paying a higher gas tax, if it meant that, because their drivers have to drive over these roads as well, too. So, I think they're willing to do that, along with everyone else.
Ann from Green Bay agrees with you. Ann, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Well, I also think instead of a toll booth, which take years and years to build, you could instantaneously raise the gas tax. I mean, we have toll booths all over the country called gas pumps.
That's a really good point, Anne. So raising the gas tax, Craig, how much are we talking about? We're paying probably $2.75, $2.80 right now here in Madison for gas. How much am I going to be paying if we raise the gas tax enough to actually fix the roads?
Well, that is where how much is enough to fix the roads? We're not going to be able to do it overnight. And so that's where I think our lawmakers are going to have to come together. And we need a plan of attack, first of all. So let's say we raise the gas tax a nickel here. Our gas tax right now is 32 cents. That would cost the average, according to the state DOT, it would cost the average driver, meaning somebody who drives an average car that gets the average amount of gas mileage, who drives about 12,000 miles a year. I know I drive much more than that, but they say that's the average. That would cost that person about $25 a year more. If you raised it 10 cents, you would double that, per car. So it just depends. Again, Indiana increased theirs 10 cents this last year. Iowa recently just increased theirs 10 cents. Michigan increased theirs 8 cents. So, in these states around us, they have value-based registration fees. So whereas we have a flat $75 here, they base it on the value of your car there. So that's where folks are paying a lot higher amount in user fees in those states than here is really on the value-based user fee. They're paying, you know, $300, $400, $500 in many cases.
We are talking about road maintenance and construction here in Wisconsin, especially the I-94 project. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Nancy from Kewaunee, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. One of your other callers kind of touched on it, but I live in Kewaunee, and we have 16 of the very large industrial farms, and our roads just, for one thing, they're not the kind of infrastructure that could ever tolerate the kind of tonnage that is pounding on them daily. I was traveling the other day, and there was a convoy of these implements are so large that they literally take up a lane and a half of traffic.
Wow.
And I think that, and, you know, going over smaller structures in our community, like small bridges and whatnot, and I'm wondering, I know those structures can't tolerate that kind of weight, and there's going to be a disaster as far as this infrastructure in our community because it just it can't continue to bear this kind of weight, and our roads are in bad condition, and I think that these farms should be responsible for picking up the tab and not the taxpayer.
Okay, Nancy, thank you very much for that. Are farmers on board with this, Craig?
Well, you know, Nancy brings up another very good and very thorny question here in Wisconsin because agriculture is such a huge part of our economy and our heritage. But these implements of husbandry, these huge farm equipment, you know, a lot of our town and county roads are not, she's right, are not built to handle a lot of that. And it's a tough situation. Again, the Farm Bureau and a lot of the groups that represent farmers have been on board with wanting to raise revenue for transportation. I think they're doing everything they can. There's talk about trying to find some more priority corridors where we could invest in trying to, you know, where we know some of these big equipment are going to go over to maybe engineer those roads to a little bit of a higher standard, which, of course, is more expensive. But it's a difficult issue. But when we do get to the point, a lot of times the county highway commissioner or even federal highway administration will look at and they'll weight restrict roads or especially bridges when it gets to a point that they don't believe equipment that heavy can go over that to try to keep everybody safe. We've got a lot of weight restricted bridges.
We have been talking to Craig Thompson. He's the executive director of the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Thank you all who called about our roads. It's the morning show.